Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. We've all heard the saying that truth can be stranger than fiction, and a lot of times the things that have happened in the past have a direct bearing on what we're able to do today moving into the future. Our next guest is someone that's been able to play around with that idea in his first novel. The book is called The House of Pearl. It's written by Robert Max Bovell. We're going to talk to him not only about his journey as a writer, producer, and designer, and now as an author, but what it's been like for him to craft together this story that's so full of mystery, love, and I think some things about ourselves that we'll all be able to appreciate. If you're just hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Robert, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine, Robert. I was telling you before we went on here that I really enjoyed the book. I think the interesting thing was how you were able to kind of maneuver us between generations of characters and being able to allow us to see how they were tied to each other and how some of the things that were happening in the present in the book, of course, you know, had to do with what happened in the past. I mean, what has it been like for you, Robert, to see the way that people have responded to the book so far?
It's been exciting. Everyone who I know that have read it and have talked to me about it have said they can't put it down. And what I like about that is that, you know, it's not a super long novel. It's 200 pages. You can really do, you know, sit down and read it in one setting.
Yeah. You know, something – oh, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to talk about how, you know, you were talking about how the past, you know, creeps up on the future or on
sure.
the present. And that's kind of what I liked about the story, that as you know, you start out in the present and then we flash back to the past, but that past slowly but surely catches up to the present and then
right.
overwhelms the present.
Right. You know, and I meant what I said when I said that is something that a lot of us deal with in our own lives, which is why I think a book like this does not seem too far-fetched, because I think a lot of times when we look at events in our lives or things that have happened in our lives, we can tie it into something that may have happened in the past or to someone in our past and realize that that's how we react to things today because of those situations. Did this seem like the natural step for you, Robert? Because as I said, you know, you have become known as a producer and designer and been, you know, really recognized in those fields. Did writing a book just seem like the natural next step for you?
Yeah, because when you're designing, you know, film or television, you're telling a story. You're just doing it with objects. And I always felt that I'd have more control over the story if I wrote the story, instead of reading the story and interpreting it by bringing in all these objects that help sell that story. So I felt well prepared. And the odd thing, when I write, it seems like I'm almost channeling, like this whatever it is that's in my head just starts flowing out. And that's just so exciting.
Yeah.
When it works.
You know,
some days it doesn't.
I think the interesting thing is, like with the main character, with that we meet in the book, you know, we're able to see how sometimes, you know, people look at success and think of what someone has, and we think, you know, well, they have everything. Well, you're able to show us in The House of Pearl that is not necessarily the case. Both, you know, I think for the male and female leads, you know, of the present of the book. I mean, was that also something that you have learned for yourself, that what you have doesn't necessarily make you? It really is the relationships you're able to form and the bonds you're able to form that really are the long-lasting things.
Oh yeah, the long-lasting friendships that you can never recreate if they're lost are so important. So all of you young folks out there who are making friends for the first time, make them carefully and hold on to the dear ones, because when you're older, those people know you so well, it's so easy to go have a chat with them and talk about the important things in your life, and they'll say, "Yeah, you know, Robert, I remember back when you were 14, you know, and you did, I'm not going to talk to you what I did when I was 14, but they just know, you know, and they can help you, you know, make important decisions because of that.
Right, right. right. Well, you know, let's talk about you in the beginning, because I mean, for you to have had the, you know, the successes that you've had and the careers that you've had, it all had to be, you know, for me, had to begin with a belief in yourself and a belief, you know, in your gifts. When did you realize that you had something that you wanted to share in the entertainment industry, Robert? How did that path begin for you?
That's a good question. You know, in high school, liked to be on stage and was in a mime troupe. And, you know, and when I went on stage and you had all those people and they're in the end clapping and applauding and appreciating what you're doing, it was an exciting feeling. And then in college, you know, I got a degree in theater arts and biology. I was in Man of La Mancha and played a number of small roles in it, as a small college would do. But when we came out at the end, we got a standing ovation. And the standing ovation started when my partner and I, we were the horse, I was the horse, and the other guy was the donkey, and we did a dance with these big horse heads on. And we came out holding the horse heads under our arms, and everybody stood up and started clapping. It's just a wonderful, gracious feeling. And
wow.
It's addictive. I can see why all these actors just love it. And it's nice to be appreciated. You know, I did receive an Emmy Award for my work, and I'll never forget waiting my turn just to find out if I won or not. And I'm a pretty calm guy, but my heart started to pump totally out of control. And then, you know, right there, like the award right before mine. And then when they called my name, I could barely breathe. And now when I watch the Oscars like I did last night, I can understand their, when they get up there and they talk like they're out of breath.
Right.
Yeah, I get it.
What an amazing thing. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think a lot of times we don't realize, we as the audience and we who are not a part of that world, we don't realize, of course, all that goes into the moments like that, for sure. You know, I think, though, the interesting thing that when I thought about this when you said that it did seem like the natural next step for you to be an author is, I think for so many people, when you are recognized for one thing, it's sometimes difficult to be seen as for anything else or doing anything else. Did you have any of those feelings of, okay, I've been, you know, successful at this, I've been successful as a designer, you know, I've been successful as a producer, can I be successful as an author?
Yes. I really felt that it was time to do something different with my creativity. You know, I've always felt that my creativity would be the thing that I can always rest on. You know, I've never feared about the future, you know, not knowing what I'd do. I always knew that somewhere out of my creative soul, I would be able to invent something. And, you know, and I have. You know, vertical video was an invention of mine back in 1989. And I trademarked it, and now it's all over television. If you notice, the screens are turned sideways now. Well, that was an influence that I created when I designed the show for the opening of the MSNBC, and it was called The Site, and they talked about computer stuff. And it was a meaningful experience for me.
Yeah. And now you have this book as another meaningful experience as well. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Robert Max Bovill is joining us for this segment. We're talking to him about not only his journey in the entertainment industry, but also what led him to write the book, The House of Pearl. Now, I mentioned earlier some of the elements of the book. We did not talk about yet, Robert, about how this all began for you. And it all began literally close to home for you with a property that you have. I mean, tell us a little bit about the story and how the seed for the story kind of was planted in you.
Yeah, I was looking to do some real estate development, you know, another creative outlet, and I found an old house. It was about 120 years old on the Sausalito waterfront. And for those who don't know where Sausalito is, it's the small little art town north of San Francisco. You go over the Golden Gate Bridge, it's the first town to your right. And this old house had a lot of history. And I didn't really know the history when I bought it. I just knew it was a really cool old house and looked great and it needed a lot of work. And I never shy away from a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I got into it, and as I was working on it, people would stop by. They were, you know, impressed. This is right near the tourist area, so I got a lot of people walking by. But some people had actually lived there, and they would tell me stories about the house. And so I had collected all these stories in my head, and I was talking to an editor friend of mine, and he said, you know, Robert, all those stories you've got, you ought to write them all down. Could be interesting. And I thought about it, and I went, okay. So I took about 3 years to write a screenplay and finally finished it. And actually, Robert Redford's son, Jamie, who lives in Fairfax, which is a little bit north of Sausalito, I met him at the Mill Valley Film Festival at a lunch. And I started telling him the story. And as celebrities like that are, you know, they get pulled away by other people. And later at that luncheon, he found me out and wanted to know how it ended. It's one of those sort of compelling stories. So after, you know, he said it would make a great movie, but he didn't do Ghosts because, you see, the Ghosts is how I put all the different stories together. Because a lot [S2] Sure. [S1] Of it is true, some of it is fiction, but in order to connect 120 years all together into one story, I needed these ghosts. And he didn't do Ghosts, but that's okay. He enjoyed the story. And then Trish Vandeveer, who is George C. Scott's wife, or you know, he's passed away, she read it and went nuts for it and wanted me to, you know, said it was okay if I put a little thing in the front of the book. And, you know, she said that George and she used to sit and read to each other and act out parts and stuff. And she said they would absolutely have enjoyed this book, which is too bad I didn't write it sooner so that he could have participated in that. But I've had a blessed life. I've had a lot of accidental things that have helped me take a step forward, you know, starting with the wonderful family full of medical doctors. I was supposed to be a doctor. That's why I had a double degree in theater arts and biology. But I just love theater, and I just kept, you know, dancing and acting and directing and designing sets, and I just loved it. And then I got lucky, and when I met Trish, you know, I was just persistent in calling. Here in San Francisco, there's a theater called ACT, the American Conservatory Theater, and I kept calling them, you know, is there any work? It was after I graduated, and they said, are you in the union? And I said, no. And then they said, how do you get in the union? And they said, well, you got to have a job. I said, well, if I can't get a job because I'm not in the union, how do I ever get in the union? Well, that's one of the problems, sir. And, you know, if you're born in, you get an extra step up. But I don't want to go there today. But I went down and I called them, and they said, nobody here wants to take this production assistant job. And I said, I'll do it. And so I made the phone call to Paramount. And they said, sure, come on down, and we'll interview you. And they met me, and, I went down in a suit with tennis shoes on, and so it was, I was a quirky kind of guy. And I met Trish Vandeveer, and she just took to me immediately, and I became her assistant then for the next, two or three years after that. She hired me, as her personal assistant. And that was my start. You know, she brought me to Los Angeles, and I started meeting people and seeing how the entertainment world worked. And I really liked designing sets because I noticed that the art directors, sets can get very boring. I don't know if you know this. When you're working on a movie, there's a lot of downtime, waiting for things to get ready. So a lot of people stand around and don't do anything and then have their 10 minutes of action and then they sit back down. The art directors were always doing things. They were never sitting around. They were always, they had to be two or three days ahead with sets being ready. And I liked that. So that's why I pursued it at first. And I met this guy, this man, Tony Duquette, and he was the only American artist to have had a one-man show at the Louvre. And he took a liking to me. And this was because Trish Van Devere had rented an office in his building. And so he met me. And then he said, you know, I'm doing this bicentennial for the Los Angeles called Our Lady Queen of the Angels. Would you like to be a part of it? And I went, sure, I think I can, I've got the time to do that. And it was a 10,000 square foot exhibit at the Museum of Science and Industry, which was dedicated to, you know, the eight archangels, and there was a statue of Mary in the center. And we did this white face, three-dimensional white face for, on the statue, and then we had cross-fading projectors that made the face change from white to black to Latin to Asian during the course of the show. And that was a great success. That was up for a year. And a wonderful experience to have worked with this man, Tony Duquette. People can look him up if they want. I don't want to spend too much time talking about him. He's passed away. He's moved on in life. He had a great one. Interesting man. You know, like I said before, I've had a blessed life. I just kind of keep moving along. And then, you know, I met somebody who knew somebody at Lucasfilm. And I started doing these watercolor paintings of outer space. I call them impressionistic paintings of space. And they liked what I did and wanted me, had considered me to work on Return of the Jedi. And I was living in Los Angeles, and they said, well, we don't want to hire people who live in Los Angeles because it's a part-time job, and, you know, it's just for a short period of time, and we don't want to uproot people. And I said, well, but I grew up in San Francisco. I got no problem with it. So he said, yeah, but that's just our policy. I said, okay. So I moved up to San Francisco, and then I called him back, and I said, hi. Lauren, it's Robert Bogle. I live up here now. Can I come to work? And he said, come on down. And so I got to work at on the tail end of Return of the Jedi as a model builder, which was great, you know, experience meeting George Lucas and all the rest of that crowd of super talented people. But I almost died on my first day. I don't know how much time you have for me to talk about things, but... if you want, I can tell you this story. It shouldn't take too long.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
So I show up my first day at work, and I'm going, it's ILM. It's the top of the top of special effects at that time. And I'm nervous as can be. And I'm given my task to do in the morning by Joe Johnston, the art director, and there was somebody else over to my left who was working a compressor. And the compressor was a pretty big thing, you know, about 2 feet in diameter, and like a big garbage can turned on its side, made out of stainless steel with a great big heavy door on it. And he's tapping on the meter, pumping up pressure, taking the bubbles out of the molds that they're making, and tapping on the meter and pumping up the pressure and tapping on the meter and pumping up the pressure. And all of a sudden, there was just this, and there was a lot of plastics being snapped and, you know, scored and snapped, you know, all these sounds in the model shop. And all of a sudden, the compressor blew up. And the door pushed open, broke all of its seals, knocked the poor guy about 10 feet away. Then the door literally broke off of the compressor. There was so much pressure that had built up inside of it. And the door came sailing across the room. And if it were a cannon, it was like pointed right at. And I was lucky that there was a table between me and it. And it was a table made out of, you know, an inch and a half box steel tube frame and a big 3/4 inch sheet of plywood on top of it. So it took the brunt of it. But it made a 6-inch dent into the table. And then the gush of air that came blowing out of this thing just blew me right off my stool. And the meter hit me in the back of the head, and I fall to the ground. and everybody's fallen to the ground. There's dust all over, and all this noise is suddenly silent for about 5 seconds. And then there's a rush of people coming in, and Joe Johnston comes up to me and he says, "Well, welcome to ILM, Robert." And maybe I should find something else to do.
What a way to
then
begin
I learned
a new adventure.
Model building is one of the most dangerous jobs you can get. I had no idea.
But, you know, Robert, I think what you just shared with us, even taking us through part of your journey in this industry, it goes back to something that you said earlier, and that is that you were not afraid of the work. And because you weren't afraid of the work, you were able to continue to grow, progress, to network, and to be able to accomplish the things that you did, you know, including, of course, with how this all began with us today, with this novel for sure. There is one more thing I wanted to mention. Then we're going to let our audience know how they can stay connected with you as well as how they can get the book for themselves. I mean, you mentioned, of course, the locations, and, you know, you were telling us, of course, where your home was. One of the things that we see in the book, especially, is that, you know, the locations are almost characters for themselves. Is that one of the things that you want people who read The House of Pearl to realize, that their locations, where they are, where they live, they're almost a living part of them?
Yes. Yes. It's so much so. I mean, we create our lives. I mean, architects have designed our society. You know, we move through buildings and on freeways and in homes. It's all been designed for us, and it has an effect on our humanity. So the things you hang up on your walls, the furniture you choose, all these things say something about you and affect you. So you should be careful and thoughtful about those things. I know I am. Although I must say I'm much better with other people's, when I decorate other people's places, I do a great job. For mine, I kind of experiment and take much bigger chances when I'm, you know, for my own personal space.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, I think, again, this is one of the reasons why this book is something that people will definitely enjoy. Even if reading paranormal is not something that they're normally into, I think that the definite connection with the past is something that they will appreciate for sure. The House of Pearl, everyone, is the title of the book. Robert Max Bovell has been our guest for this segment. The book is available through our friends at Amazon.com. But, Robert, how can our audience stay connected with you, too?
Well, a couple of ways. There is a website called thehouseofpearlbook.com. And my website is bovillecreative.com. Although I haven't gotten in there to update it recently, but it's got a lot of material in it still. And there's some fun things to look at. Should I be giving out my email, or is that too personal?
You know, let me ask you, is the email on the website?
Yes, actually it is.
Okay, yeah. So we'll just lead them to the website then. So the thehouseofpearlbook.com is the website then, but that we'll let them go to for sure. And then, as I said, too, they can head over to Amazon.com. Robert, thank you so much for the time today. I appreciate your stopping by and looking forward to talking with you again.
Yeah, me too. I really enjoyed this. I'm new to this, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Cyrus.
Hey, you're more than welcome. Thank you for the time. And we thank you, our audience, for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. For our radio audience, you all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. But if joining us online, though, we are going to lose you. So if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media friends. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free and share with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.